She had only one ally in all this, and that was the distant authority of my father. Increasingly, she would remind me of his story, how he had grown up poor in a poor country, in a poor continent, how his life had been hard as anything that Lolo might have known. He hadn't cut corners, though, or played all the angles. He was diligent and honest, no matter what it cost him. He had led his life according to principles that demanded a different kind of toughness, principles that promised a higher form of power. I would follow his example, my mother decided. I had no choice. It was in the genes. "You have me to thank for your eyebrows," my mother said. "Your father had these little wispy eyebrows that don't amount to much. But your brains, your character, you got from him." Her message came to embrace black people generally. She would come home with books on the civil rights movement, the recordings of Mahalia Jackson, the speeches of Dr. King. When she told me stories of school children in the South who were forced to read books handed down from wealthier white schools, but who went on to become doctors and lawyers and scientists, I felt chastened by my reluctance to wake up and study in the mornings. If I told her about the goose-stepping demonstrations my Indonesian Boy Scout troop performed in front of the president, she might mention a different kind of march, a march of children no older than me, a march for freedom. Every black man was Thurgood Marshall or Sidney Poitier, every black woman Fannie Lou Hamer or Lena Horne. To be black was to be the beneficiary of a great inheritance, a special destiny, glorious burdens that only we were strong enough to bear. Burdens we were to carry with style. More than once, my mother would point out, Harry Belafonte is the best-looking man on the planet. It was in this context that I came across the picture in Life magazine of the black man who had tried to peel off his skin. I imagine other black children, then and now, undergoing similar moments of revelation. Perhaps it comes sooner for most. The parents warning not to cross the boundaries of a particular neighborhood, or the frustration of not having hair like Barbie, no matter how long you tease and comb, or the tale of a father's or grandfather's humiliation at the hands of an employer or a cop, overheard while you're supposed to be asleep. Maybe it's easier for a child to receive the bad news in small doses, allowing for a system of defenses to build up. Although I suspect I was one of the luckier ones, having been given a stretch of childhood free from self-doubt. I know that seeing that article was violent for me, an ambush attack. My mother had warned me about bigots. They were ignorant, uneducated people that one should avoid. If I could not yet consider my own mortality, Lolo had helped me understand the potential of disease to cripple, of accidents to maim, of fortunes to decline. I could correctly identify common greed or cruelty in others, and sometimes even in myself. But that one photograph had told me something else, that there was a hidden enemy out there, one that could reach me without anyone's knowledge, not even my own. When I got home that night from the embassy library, I went into the bathroom and stood in front of the mirror, with all my senses and limbs seemingly intact, looking as I had always looked, and wondered if something was wrong with me. The alternative seemed no less frightening, that the adults around me lived in the midst of madness. The initial flush of anxiety would pass, and I would spend my remaining year in Indonesia much as I had before. I retained a confidence that was not always justified, and an irrepressible talent for mischief. But my vision had been permanently altered. On the imported television shows that had started running in the evenings in Indonesia, I began to notice that Cosby never got the girl on I Spy, that the black man on Mission Impossible spent all his time underground. I noticed that there was nobody like me in the Sears Roebuck Christmas catalog that Toot and Gramps sent to us, and that Santa was a white man. I kept these observations to myself, deciding that either my mother didn't see them, or she was trying to protect me, and that I shouldn't expose her efforts as having failed. I still trusted my mother's love, but I faced the prospect that her account of the world and my father's place in it was somehow incomplete.